Okay, so we're starting this conversation with laughter.
I'm gonna mute myself.
So
this is gonna be a fun night.
Yes, exactly. So hi everyone. As maybe you can tell by the voices, it's Sam and John and myself. And for tonight's campfire conversation, first of all, as you know, we're doing this by Instantel seminar, so it's audio only. And the reason we're doing it this way is because tonight we just want to have kind of an open Q&A session. And this is truly for everyone to ask a question, everyone to answer. And so by doing it on Instantel seminar, you can ask a question or answer a question either on the chat line if you'd rather just type out your question or answer, or you can hit *2 on your phone, which means you have to be listening on your phone. And of course, you can watch the chat line on Basecamp or the Secret Garden as well. But if you're listening by phone, you can hit *2. And what that will do is raise a hand on our screen. So we know that you want to come on, and we will unmute you, and you can ask a question or make a comment. But truly, we'd like to do a series of questions and answers for everyone on here, which means we have to do it quickly. So you might ask, you know, any kind of a question that's open for anyone to answer, unless you see someone specifically you want to answer your question. It's really asked toward them, and then make that clear. But let's just go around, and I've got some great questions that I can't wait to ask. And some are, you know, quick, light questions, and some are much harder. So since I've got command of the show at this second, before I relinquish it, I'm going to ask a question of John Hard to begin with, and then anybody can answer it, whether it's on the chat line or you raise your hand and you answer verbally. And this is a really easy one, John, especially for you.
How do you pronounce your first name?
So... That's really funny. So here's my question, because I know you, this answer is just going to pop out right away. And that is this. Growing up, John, and then anyone else can answer it for themselves as well. Growing up, John, what was your favorite group or musician and why?
Yes. The group, yes.
Yeah. Come on, narrow it down for us.
The group, yes.
Oh,
that was
seriously?
The name of the group.
That's really funny. Oh, you got us. Okay. And why?
You never heard of Yes?
I've heard of them. Well, it sounded like an answer to the question, like you were saying, yes, everybody. So
no,
so give us
fine.
Give us a few of their popular song titles so that we
well,
know
you.
Now
you have to have heard Roundabout.
Yep.
That's probably their most famous hit. The reason I like them, I'm a bass player, and their bass player is probably one of the best in the world. And the other thing I like is that their music is just incredibly complex. It's just not your typical rock music. And I love especially the interplay between the bass player and the drummer. If you ever sit and really listen to what they're doing together, it just is fascinating. In fact, I read a story about the original drummer who recorded most of their songs in their early albums left the band after they got pretty famous, and they kept trying. They couldn't find drummers who could play the same way he did because it was so incredibly complex.
Hmm.
So anyway, that's the short answer to your question.
Okay. So anyone else out there, if you want to give an answer, like I said, type it on the chat line or to raise your hand and let us know. Feel free to do that. So Sam, let me ask you.
Nope. Growing my turn up, to ask you a question. My turn to
no, come on. It's a quick answer. Just real quickly.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, real quickly, what was your favorite band or musician group growing up?
You know, when I was growing up, I liked James Taylor. I just liked his music. I liked listening to it. And so, easy answer. I think
okay.
I started listening to him when I was 13 or 14 years old. And I just liked it. It was, you know, it's sort of a country rock type thing, but different of his albums sounded different. And I really liked his music. I tried to play his music on the guitar, and
yeah. And I liked. Sam, I don't know if most people know out there that you are a musician. You are very good with guitar, and I know you said you played the. Did you say
trumpet.
Trombone? Trumpet. Okay.
Trumpet.
Yep. So, yeah. Okay, so let me ask this. Now, that was an easy giveaway question. So I'm going to ask another one. And, again, I'm not dominating, but I got one-on-one.
I'm not dominating, but I'm not giving up the mic. Okay.
So now I'm going to go from shallow to much deeper, okay? So this is a big leap. Is there some doctrine? Remember, this is going to any of you out there, and if you don't answer the question, then John and Sam are forced to answer it. Is there some?
Well, that's
doctrine?
No incentive. They'll not answer on purpose.
That's true. Okay. Is there some doctrine or spiritual experience that you have avoided because you've seen its extreme? So let me ask it again. Is there some doctrine or spiritual experience that you avoid or want to avoid or who have tended to avoid because you've seen its extreme? Now, let me say also, I realize that all of you listening on the streaming on Basecamp or Secret Garden are hearing this 60 seconds later, a minute after we actually say it. So I know there'll be a delay in response here. So
does that mean we get to delete it if we say something we don't want them to hear?
We could
sort of go back button.
So why don't one of you guys answer that while we're waiting for everyone else to hear it and decide what they're going to say and how they're going to say it?
Well, I can answer it from my position, although I don't want to offend anybody. So I just with that qualification, I got involved in a charismatic renewal early in my life. You know, I was early teenager. But I just always had some hesitations. Well, I mean, I went to a couple like healing prayer meeting type stuff, and I do avoid those. I so often feel like there's so much hype and there's so much euphoria and there's so much waiting for the spectacular that I just feel uncomfortable. And I've seen real healings. I really have. I mean, I can attest to it in my own life where I had a broken leg on a hiking trip out east in the wilderness where it was a compound broken. So, like, you know, the bone was sticking through. We prayed over it and it healed when I was 15. I'm serious.
Wow.
But, yeah, in fact, I used to have x-rays. I don't anymore to prove it. But I still get bugged by the situation where everybody just comes to be healed. And so I feel very, you know, there was this big thing, and I think it was in Pensacola, Florida. Was that where it was several years ago? Like
yeah,
10 years ago?
Yeah, yeah.
And I had a bunch of friends who were going down there, and I just could not bring myself to go down there. I just feel a little uncomfortable with not the faith part. The faith part is fine, but sort of the spectacular, I don't know. So I have just confessed my problem, one of my many problems.
Okay, so now I'm going to...
It's
I
the
see
circus
Brad
thing,
has,
that's what Byrne says. It's the circus that I don't like.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, and the question really is a personal question about what we've experienced in extremes, not a critique of the theology or whatever. So,
and I don't want to offend people because I know that a lot of people have experienced a lot of joy from that. So
right.
I'm just telling my experience, not
criticizing
someone else's.
Okay, so Brad, you raised your hand. Go ahead.
So I'm similar to Sam's situation. I grew up in a kind of a Reformed theology and went to a number of charismatic churches and actually went for a baptism and, received what they would call the baptism of the Holy Spirit. But the thing that was really kind of offensive to me was how they insisted that everyone had to have the same experience. And there was one guy who did not speak in tongues, and they really were kind of putting him down. And for me, that was just unbelievable. I took the guy off to the side afterwards and said, hey, let's not catastrophize here. You have Jesus, and that's what it's really about. And so I guess for me, a lot of the kind of the extremism that you see, not just in charismatic groups, but in a variety of groups, is kind of in the insistence that everybody have the same experience. And, that's kind of a turnoff for me. So I'm very cautious with, you know, people who insist on a common experience for everyone.
Yeah. Well, you know, Brad, now that you say that, the other thing I realize is not just the Pensacola stuff, but I would say the second thing really close that I try to avoid is anything to do with calling retreats.
That is the strangest group. I know.
It's the closest. It's a really close second.
Okay.
Especially guys
thanks,
who
speak
at calling retreats.
Yeah. Okay, so we've got someone else. Oh, I think it must be Vern out of Pennsylvania. But let me throw out an answer real quickly. And part of my heart towards the question is there are certain things. I think the enemy loves to use extremes to keep us away from things, from truth. And so, like for me, and I think I've talked about this before, I started seeing what I thought was an extreme in the idea of spiritual warfare. And, you know, every time something happened, we were casting out some demon or binding up Satan or something. And it got to a point where I really just kind of put the theology of spiritual warfare away from me. And I've sensed lately that, you know, God is saying, no, come back. That area of spirituality, of Christianity, you don't have to go there. You know, you don't have to be that person or that group. And so I felt God kind of bringing me back to say, you know, come on back to this. Don't neglect it because you've seen extremes. And I think that's what he does to us, you know. And Sam, yours was a great example. I mean, I've known people throughout the years that would not deal with kind of spiritual gifts because they've seen extremes in it. And yet it's in the Bible, and you have to say, you know, it's
right
there.
And I don't even mean to say Pensacola was an extreme. I agree with you.
Yeah. So. Okay, so let me go to our Pennsylvania caller. This sounds like a radio station, and I think it's Vern. So go
hey.
Ahead, Vern. There you
hey,
are.
Hey, it is me. Hey, I had to walk outside Starbucks. I'm working in my Starbucks office today. So I have this what I'm finding with me with the extremes is I feel a pull in my spirit when I feel cornered or – And I realize that is an opportunity for me. What happens is I think I get put off to core gifts that God has for us because of a pull, because I react. So this was a real breakthrough for me. I was in a context where it was very Pentecostal context, and they're going around saying we're going to Baptist spirit into you. You're going to be imparted right now if you don't have it, right? And they're coming to me. And I'm getting increasingly more uncomfortable because I don't feel like I'm missing anything at this point. The Spirit talks to me, whatever. I just don't do it the same way. And I'm praying, God, how am I going to deal with this situation? Because I'm feeling really uncomfortable. I'm feeling really reactive. And this is what God gave me in the moment. They came to me and he said, do you speak in tongues? And I said, well, you know, I go into prison every week. Back when I was doing prison ministry. I go into prison every week. And I spend a pile of time with people, and I speak into the pain of their heroin addiction. So I do speak in tongues. I speak in the tongue of heroin. I just use English to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to realize that's the truth. The truth is we all – there's the idea of speaking in tongues is not this narrow little thing. It's this really wide thing, and I don't need to feel cornered. And it gave me – when I don't feel cornered, I can celebrate the gifts of speaking in tongues in a way that I don't necessarily do, but I can experience. You know, someone else can – people pray over me in tongues all the time, and it's a wonderful thing, and I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I don't do the same way, but I don't feel the need to react anymore. And so now when I start to feel the pull, when I start to feel a rejection, like an internal rejection of me, of something I know to be part of the wholeness of what Christ offers us. When I feel that pull, I'm like, okay, that might be an extreme, but there's something under that. What's God got to say to me about that right now?
Right. That's good, Vern.
So I have a question for Gary. And this is a gentle question, which really is really so I've heard your story several times. I mean, you and I have talked about it. I've read your book. I've even read your books many times, actually. And I know that you left university thinking you wanted to start a bunch of gymnastic centers. I know after a few years in L.A., you decided that wasn't it. When did you put the word calling on the thing that you want to pursue helping other people with? At what point in your life did you all of a sudden say, that's the word, that's the label, that's it?
Wow, I never thought about that.
Yeah, but at least it's not an embarrassing question. That's later
that's
on.
True.
After
that's
we've
true.
Relaxed you.
Yeah. Oh, I see what you're doing. You know what? I think it might have been, you know, one of the books that had a huge impact on my life was that book by Henry Blackaby, Experiencing God.
Yeah.
And I think he talked a lot about the term calling. It might have been that.
I don't
that.
Remember. Now, it might have
yeah,
been.
Yeah, I think it was more that than like the word purpose or something. I mean, I've always been fascinated with the idea of the purpose of our life, our design, our destiny. But I think that's when I first started hearing someone use the word calling. And I believe it was him. I mean, later I read Oz Guinness's book,
right.
called The Call. But I think that was much later. And I don't know if I heard, and John, you could answer this because you were in the Campus Crusade culture. I don't know if I heard calling that much in that culture. So it might have been more around like Henry Blackaby's book and Paul Stanley, who was mentoring me and taking me through a study in that. So,
but even if John heard it or if you heard it in Campus Crusade, the term they use for calling and the way we talk about it now are two different things.
Oh, exactly.
So I was more asking, when did you come up with your current, you know, when did you use calling as sort of an understanding of, as a label for your understanding of stuff?
Yeah.
You answer.
You know, I think that's, okay, I get your question, and that's a really good question. I think my understanding started to change as I had to reconcile this idea with there are people who are in, you know, vocational ministry, if you will, a 501c3, be it a church or a parachurch organization, whatever terms. And there are people that are in secular work, so to speak, secular work, and both have a strong sense that God has called them there. Both of their lives are equally as valuable in the kingdom of God and what he is doing, not just in relationship with Jesus, but what God is doing in this world. And I felt like I have to reconcile this. I have to understand this. And so as I looked at Scripture more and more, it changed my understanding, my definition of a person's calling to, you know, to what we speak about now. So that's a good question, Sam.
Wow. I have a question for Vern.
Okay.
I want to hear from Vern when he started doing some kind of ministry stuff versus just purely standard business. So, you know,
okay, Vern, you're on
mute for a long time. Vern, you were in the business world a long time. You had other things going on. But when did you feel a call, if you will, a compelling, something on your heart, a desire to do a certain kind of ministry?
When I first went to jail.
Voluntarily, I think. I'm sorry, this is going to be, that's the answer of the evening so far. Four words. No, when I first went to jail, a few more words. That was a good answer.
Yeah, actually, I had an office in the Infomart in Dallas, Texas, and I'd made, in December of 2000, I'd made the most money I'd ever made in 1 year, probably more than most people ever make in 1 year. I couldn't do it again. And I surrendered. Then about a year of total annihilation. And that entire annihilation had to happen before I couldn't breathe for about a year and a half. And it was after that I was kind of stuck. And ministry for me came out of, well, I have this. You know, I have this. I can do this. Because I couldn't do anything else. And so ministry came out of this weird spot of having resources and time and seeing need, and we will put the calling together. I wouldn't have called it a calling at that point because I was too busy running away from it. But I think it was probably 2002 that I really started to realize, oh, there's something in this. There's something that's deeper than just I'm going to jail and working with some inmates.
You know, I once heard someone talk about, you know, in AA or different kind of 12-step programs, sometimes they talk about hitting bottom. But I think another metaphor that I heard once was they sort of talk about Moses who sees a burning bush, and it was the enigma. It was the bizarreness. It was just the strangeness of the experience. It's encountering a new reality. It doesn't have to hit bottom. It's sometimes
yeah.
the strangeness of a new experience that gets you to rethink everything. And, but in a certain sense, for you, jail was a burning bush. It didn't have to mean hitting bottom. It was a burning bush.
There's another way of seeing the same thing. Yeah, that is it. There's another way of seeing the same thing. It's when you get one or two steps past yourself. When you are out past what you ever believed was possible, however that happened. When everything you believed, it's sort of like in the Falling Upwards book, they talk about that intermediary period between first half life and second half life, where everything's
right.
topsy-turvy and upside down. It doesn't have to be, in my case, the genesis of it was felt like destruction, but when I look back, it was really just a stripping. God was stripping all these things off of me that says, okay, you're not going to need that, and you're not going to need that, and you thought this was you, and it's not really you. It hurts like it's you, but it's not you. And once I got all stripped, then there was the burning bush like you're talking, Sam. Then there was, wow, there's something out here. Besides, you know, I thought, so there was this stripping, and it felt like less. I felt like I was disappearing less and less and less and less of me. And then, once it was all stripped away, then God says, hey, did you ever notice this spot? You know, this ministry spot. You ever notice that calling thing there that you've been ignoring for a long time? Actually, I wasn't ignoring my calling. I was selling it to the highest bidder. That was the problem.
You were prostituting it.
And so I quit selling it, and I started for me, the beginning of actually stepping into my calling was a huge bit of generosity.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of the burning bush thing. It was stepping way past myself. I am way out of anything that anyone could consider normal, anything that I would ever consider normal. And then God says, well, you know, now that we're done this stripping thing, there's these parts. Wouldn't you like to know how that part works? And I would never have dreamed I would do it in jail. I would, you know, that just wasn't in the cards for me.
Right.
You know, it was really cool.
Gary on the chat line is praying that I go to jail. So.
Well, I just thought we'll just help you out. We'll send you to jail. I think it's a great idea, and the longer the better. It's a deeper.
You know, it could be one of the exercises for the calling intensive.
Hey, thanks, Vern. That was great.
Thank you very
much. Sure.
Hey, I have a question for you, Gary, from Jerry Goddard.
Yeah, Gary says, I'm seeing this. Go ahead.
I know you're seeing it, and I'm going to read it out loud anyway. He says, Gary, I know your story. How have you, or do you, deal with the antagonism and abandonment by ministry partners, the rejection of what you believe is your God-given calling? Is the wounding ever completely gone or dealt with?
All right. Now we're jumping right into the deep end, huh?
That's a really good
okay.
question, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess what goes around comes around.
No more how do you pronounce your first name.
No more who's your favorite band or group.
Yeah, the answer is not yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, Jerry, that's a tough one. I mean, that is the hardest thing, because I think when you sincerely kind of join your heart life to another, and you're walking in something together, and you're passionate about the same thing, much of what Sam talked about in his friendship talk, kind of you kind of both see the same truth, and you're saying, as C.S. Lewis said, you see that too, and you're excited about it, and you're moving forward together. And then that gets ripped apart. I still feel it. I mean, you guys know it. You see it spring forth in me every once in a while. I mean, less now than before, and less eruptive than before. So I still feel it, because much of what I do either touches on what I did before with others, or it involves that circle of people. And so it's hard. But I can honestly tell you that it affects me far less now than it did before. I mean, before, you know, you might see me in a context become very angry or very tense or very emotional. And then after a while, it was less visible but still very internal. And now I would say it's it's slight internally and it's slight externally, I think. I think Sam could especially comment on that, if that's true or not, because we've been together probably the most in a lot of circumstances. So.
Well, I would say it's definitely true. I would say that when we do bring it up, you're much more just personally reflective and much less hurt or angry. I mean, I think you sort of say, no, what did we do? What did they do? To me, you seem much more healed. I'm not saying you're 100% healed, but I would say that to me, that you deal with it almost always quite graciously and more reflectively, self-reflectively.
Yeah. And Jerry, knowing a little bit about your story and what's happened to you and some of the hurt and wounding in ministry, walking with others, for me, I have to continually wrestle with the idea, or I try to bring in front of my thinking this idea that God had to bring me out of one thing to bring me to the next. And sometimes that transition is painful and it's ripping and tearing, and sometimes it's gracious and, you know, a stroll. And this happened to be, for whatever reason, very disruptive, ripping, tearing, wounding. But the thing is, I'm here now, and I'm very grateful for that I'm here now. And I'm really trying to believe that's not coming out of a place of, I'm so glad I'm not around them anymore. It's not that. I just love where I am, and I don't think that we could have merge the two, though I wonder about that. I wonder why. So I have to keep going back to that and the idea that God works all things together for our good, for his purposes. So I have to just believe that more and more. So
I have a question for John Hart.
Good. Well, first, I get to ask you a question. How's that?
Way to go, John.
Well, Jim McFarland posted this, and it's for Gary or Sam, so that lets me off the hook. But he says, who comes to mind when you ask who is the person who came alive with their newfound calling?
I'm going to say Gary came alive.
Yes, no. So I'm waiting to hear this, Sam. Someone that you saw really, really change, come alive with this whole idea of their calling.
Well, you know, let me tell you a story that isn't quite as dramatic, and yet I think it was really powerful. There was a young man who came to a calling retreat that we did in Michigan, I don't know, Gary, at my church 3 or 4 years ago. His name is Rick, and I think he was 25 years old at the time. He had a degree in education. He wanted to become a teacher, and for some reason at the time, he just couldn't get a teaching job. So he was working at a local company, and they had given him some kind of management division where he managed 6 or 7 people. And he hated inefficiency. He hated bureaucracy. He hated doing something where you just feel like you're on a treadmill going nowhere and getting there fast. And he came to the calling retreat hoping to figure out what he should do for a new job. But what he realized from the calling retreat is he really loves to put order, structure, and purpose into things. So in his division, in his little division, what he decided to do right after the calling weekend, I mean, I met with him on Monday after the calling weekend. He said, I'm going to start in my division every week. We're going to have a meeting once a week for 2 hours. We're just going to say, I hate bureaucracy. And for 2 hours, we're going to talk about the stuff in our company, the red tape, that is frustration, and we're just going to fix it. In our division, we're going to fix it. If it's 17 spreadsheets that we can organize into one, if it's, whatever. And so the last I heard, for 2 years, he had this weekly meeting every Friday, a two-hour meeting. They called it I Hate Bureaucracy. And he made a huge difference in the company. He took all these inarticulate frustrations that everybody else had, and he did something about it. He fixed it. He streamlined things. Now, I think they promoted him, but I think he went off and got an MBA, and the last I heard, he was about to finish his MBA, so he's probably still there. But what I liked about him is he knew he didn't have an answer for his current job, which didn't fit him, but he decided to bring part of him to that current job right then and there. And I just really liked it. I thought that was really admirable for a young 25-year-old man.
Yeah, that's a good story. Yep.
That's not as dramatic as Jim is asking for, but what I liked is he did something. He got an idea and he went for it.
Yep. Yeah, so I'll tell a story since you asked that question, Jim. And there was a guy, he was kind of in my band of brothers, if you will, use that term, way back, even when I was with Ransom Heart, so many, many years ago. And he was the kind of guy that was, back in the early years, he was really trying to discern the rungs in the ladder of success, what to climb next, what next thing to put his foot on or his hand on. And he really didn't know who he was. He was just looking at what might be successful for him. And so we just spent time together. And he typically was a guy who would respond to a question or something you needed, but he rarely ever initiated offering something to somebody, his voice, his insight, whatever that was. And I just remember there was a turning point with him. In fact, we were out at our friend's house who lived out in the Black Forest area near us in the woods, and we had a campfire going, and we were just talking. And often the guys would kind of look to me to lead the time, ask the question, you know, probe, kind of get it going. And then one day I walked up and I just said, guys, I'm really hurting. I said, I don't know what to do with my life. I'm in the fog. I'm just in a bad way right now. And it was amazing how this guy all of a sudden changed. I mean, he stood up. He found his voice. He found his strength. And he started asking questions and making observations and praying. And he's really never changed since. He is still that guy. In fact, times I need to back him down and say, hey, you can't ask all the questions around here. You know, we want to find out how you're doing. But I mean, something changed in him drastically and long term when he realized he had a voice and his voice was needed. So that was just I love, you know, and I still know him. We still spend time together, but that was a radical change I saw.
That's great.
Okay, so I don't see anybody, I think, asking a question on here. So let me ask a question now.
Wait, John, I was going to ask John a question.
Okay.
No, go ahead. You can.
No, I'll quit crying.
I'm not whining
anymore.
Oh,
you
yeah.
Yeah, go ahead,
Jerry.
So my question is, does anybody believe that? So, so you asked that question. I think John had his own question as well, but he was asking Jim's question for us. So.
Oh, that's right. John can ask a question before you do.
Okay.
Like you're going to listen to me.
John, go ahead. We got about 10 more minutes.
Well, go ahead, Sam. You had the question. I don't really have anything.
John, the question I have for you is, you have this term you like to describe yourself. You like the term to say you're a trail guide for the heart.
Yeah.
So why not an excavator? Why not an explorer? Why not an astronaut? Why not a... and I'm serious about this. Why not a, you know, I'm trying to think of other kinds of words. Why a trail guide as opposed to explorer, astronaut of the heart? Why explore? Why do you want to be a trail guide of the heart?
You know, that's a good question. I'm trying to remember, somebody else recently said that they felt like they were an explorer of the heart, and I can't remember who it was now. And I thought, that's so close to mine, but the difference is, as a trail guide, I like coming alongside another guy and walking along the path with him. And there is the sense of, I love exploring the heart with him. I love digging deep, but I love to do it just as a brother, as a fellow traveler on the trail. Not necessarily somebody who's, well, I guess in a sense, somebody who's been down the trail, I recognize some of the things you're going through, but not necessarily as an expert or whatever, just as another brother. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it absolutely does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really good, and it's just been fun, John, watching you do this naturally, like at the base camp gathering. I could just see when the trail guide was back on duty again. But that's who you are, not on duty. That's not the right word, but I could see when he was fully engaged. He had his trail guide hat on, maybe I should say.
So I'm going to read a – oh, go ahead.
No, I'm done.
I'm going to read a question from Sarah for Gary. And I think it's actually really interesting. I mean, don't just dismiss it, Gary. Sarah said, I've often thought it must have required some courage to let Sam in as a friend and a ministry partner. And don't we know that, Gary? because of Gary's past, not because of anything bad about Sam.
Yeah,
although
no.
There's that element as well. So talk about that. Because of your past, how scary was that? I mean, you know, what do they say? Once burnt, twice cautious. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. You haven't heard
that? Yeah, I've heard of those. I just was wondering how long you could go on those expressions. So
I ran out.
I could tell. So, okay, that is a good point, a good question. And let me address it this way. When I started the Noble Heart, I was both excited about the Noble Heart and burned at the same time. And so I really was, I think, more subconsciously, without consciously kind of working it over and rationalizing it, thinking, you know what, it's just so much easier to work alone. I mean, I just learned a lesson. Friendships, partnerships don't work. I mean, I think that was going on at a heart level, an unconscious level, actually. And what occurred, Sarah, was that this was early on, like a month after starting the Noble Heart, maybe the second month, somewhere in there, I was actually on the phone with a person, and we were talking, and he was telling me a story or something, and I found myself looking at my computer screen, looking at emails, and I thought, I got to walk away from this computer screen. So I was on my cell phone, so I could walk away. I sat on another chair near my desk, and as I was listening, you know, you have to look somewhere. So I looked over. I was just kind of glancing on the room, and I looked at my bookshelf, and it was as if God said, "Now I want you to pay attention to those two pictures on your bookshelf." And one was a picture that I've always loved of these four horsemen riding across this river early in the morning, and another was a postcard picture that was sent to me. One was a print. This was a postcard picture now of this Indian sitting up on his horse, headdress on, looking forward, and I felt like God said to me, Gary. Or I really did hear him say, Gary, which do you want? You need to choose right now. And I knew what he meant. The four horsemen, it was actually a painting done in as a memorial for four men who had died in an airplane accident together. And it was the idea they were crossing the Jordan River together. And you could see the breath from the nostrils of the horses and the men. It was early in the morning. It was brisk. They were going somewhere. And then the Indian, what I loved, it was the same kind of fall colors. You could tell it was cold in the morning, but he was on something, whether it was a scouting party or he was hunting. I don't know. You can't tell by the picture. But I knew God was saying, so do you want to continue alone as you've been living recently, or do you want to be together? And God was saying, you really have to choose. It's your choice, and you're going to have to move with the choice. And I knew I wanted to do this together, and so I literally had to push through the, I don't want to get into friendships and get hurt again like this, because I don't think they work, to, no, this is what I want. That was a particular situation. God may have been up to something that he had to do this to get me here, and I'm still kind of trying to answer that question. So it was hard, but actually, well, yes and no, it was hard. I had to make the choice to pursue friendship. That was hard. The friendships themselves were not that hard, and I think I, and Sam can answer this, I probably took them fairly cautiously, little by little. I wasn't jumping in going, oh gosh, would you be my best friend? That would be weird anyway. People would be running if I did that. But it was just little by little, you know, kind of testing the waters, and so I don't know if that answers the question. I think it's the best I can answer it right now, honestly.
I think that, I mean, I like the story of God speaking to you. Even though you're in a phone call, God speaking to you and asking you a question. You know, do you want door number one or do you want door number two?
Yeah.
And really, he's just stirring your desire because you want door number two or whichever door it was. I can't remember. But I do think that your approach and my approach was we never actually started to try to be friends. I don't know that it dawned on us as much as we just started doing some stuff together and friendship.
Right.
Happened along the way. I mean, we sort of looked back and said, my goodness, we've become friends. So in a certain sense, to answer Sarah's question, we just started working together. We just started doing some stuff together, and we didn't destroy each other. And so somewhere in the process, we became friends.
Yeah.
Well, I might have destroyed Gary, but he didn't destroy me.
Well, you're too tough. Way too tough.
Okay,
so we've got five more minutes. I've got a question, unless someone else does out there. Okay, I'll ask it. And so the question I would ask anyone and everyone out there, and that is this. What is one of the things that you would like to change about your life right now? And it could be anything. It could be from the amount of time you sleep to, you know, it could be absolutely anything. But what's the one thing that you'd love to change about your life right now? Not the thing, but one of the things. And, hey, I'll start it. I'll just, you know, right off as I was thinking about this question and writing them down this afternoon, I thought, you know, I really would like to spend more and more frequently an undistracted time with God in the morning. I still find myself very distracted by, you know, what I wonder is facing me today or what I know is going to face me today or, you know, those kind of things. And I find I still infrequently have, you know, a fairly undistracted time where it just feels just completely relational between me and God in the morning. And that's one thing I think I'd like to change. Seems to me the line went dead.
It did seem like it went dead. Bob Gifter says he would just love a job, but would love even more for it to be aligned with his truest self.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. That's one thing you'd love to change, is to have a job and one that aligns with who you are. That's a big one. Yep. So you realize with the silence so far while we're waiting, that puts a pressure on John, on you, and Sam to answer that.
Puts it on John. I've talked enough.
Well, I'm a little like Bob. I've got a job, and it's actually it's just an ideal job for me, and yet I would like to phase out more and more or maybe somehow align it more and more with my true heart's desire. It's the thing I've been working on for the last 3 or 4 years, just tweaking my job situation, and I'm just in the continual process of doing that more and more.
Okay. And that doesn't surprise me because we've talked, and I know that to be true of you. By the way, just for those of you listening, Jerry said on here, he said the one thing that he would like to see changed is just the sense of uncertainty. He said, and then he said, though I am actually enjoying it, the walking with God, but if I'm reading that right, Jerry, so what you would like to change is just the uncertainty you feel in your life. So, yeah, thanks for sharing that. Okay, so Brad, I'm going to get him on. Brad Weber from Oregon wants to answer that. So go ahead, Brad.
So I have adult kids, and I think I did a pretty poor job of fathering them. And even now, one of my kids, my son, lives with us. And so one of the things I would really like to see is for me to really step up. And even at this late date, he's 31 years old, provide some of the things that I didn't provide him in the way of fathering.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but to me, the saving grace that I have to live with is, the expression is, it's never too late.
Yeah.
So I have a question from Lindsay in Secret Garden for Gary. I guess it could be for any of us.
Exactly. Go ahead.
She said, what about when we're afraid of disappointing friends? Lately, I've had an experience where my friend felt abandoned by me, but I just didn't have the energy to give.
Yeah, you know, let me just throw out something. This is not to stop anyone else, but and we'll end on this. Man, Lindsay, I know that one. I know what it's like to disappoint somebody, and you feel it, you see it in their eyes, or you hear it expressed through their voice, and that makes me want to say, you know what, I'm not going to try to be a friend to anybody because I don't want to keep disappointing people, and that's what I'm going to do. Or gosh, when did I ever commit to that level of friendship that I didn't give you that disappointed you, and therefore then I pull back even more. So I know that, and I just know that I have to resist this idea of I'm afraid to offer because I don't want to disappoint people, and then I become the cause of their pain in their life, when I'm thinking, I never promised that to you. It's not my fault. It's actually your fault. You were wanting more from me than I was willing to offer. But, you know, I'm trying to figure out how to live in the grace of it is I'm going to offer, period, whether it causes them pain or me pain, because I think my heart is pure and just wanting to offer something and love them in that way. So I think I understand that pain you're talking about, and therefore the feeling of disengagement that starts to come up in me. What do you guys do with that?
I'm going to answer that because I did have that experience a number of years ago with a good friend, and I felt guilty because I was sort of walking away from the relationship myself, and I just kept taking it to the Lord, and he kept reminding me and taking me back to, he said, that person has to walk with me. It's not up to you to correct them or fix them. And so you don't need to feel guilty about if they were sucking the life out of you, which in this particular case they were. It was just like the Lord giving me permission not to have to go back in and just saying, you know, he's got it covered, and he wants to take them through a process that doesn't involve me to bring healing and restoration in their life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Lindsay, I would say that the fact that you feel your friend's pain is a good thing. It shows some kind of connection between you and her. So I wouldn't try to numb yourself to the pain. But as John was saying, I think at the same time we have to balance what Oswald Chambers has this great phrase. He says, sometimes we try to be many providences. You know, in other words, we try to be God and we can't be. And so I think it's right to feel your friend's pain, but I think it's also right to say, I'm not the one that can fix it. It is God. And I care for her and I want God to fix her. And I hope she doesn't reject me because I can't fix her, but or can't help her. But I'm only who I am right now. And so pray that God heals the relationship, keeps the relationship intact, but also ends up turning your friend, that the Lord himself gives your friend the strength that she needs.
Yeah. You know, and the other thing, as I'm listening to you, Sam, and John, and then reading, Lindsay, your comment again, because you said, and I didn't have the energy to give, what helps me to some degree is I will look at people and I will say, I will kind of determine if they're a mission or they're a person that is just to be a good friend right now. And I they're not necessarily mutually exclusive, but there are some people that are just in a very hurting state. They're, and this is such a negative term, but needy, right? They just need a lot right now from whatever's happened in their life or their own mannerisms or whatever. And if I look at them as a mission, I'm actually able to be more gracious with them, and I'm able to look at our time together of during this time, I'm just going to keep giving to them because they're my mission right now. I'm not looking for anything to come back. And I'll also make sure that it's kind of regulated. There are boundaries. There's a certain frequency to how often we meet because I understand how hard it's going to be. But that's okay. It's ministry. It's mission. But if I view them as a friend and wanting that, and yet they're completely draining to me, that then it turns, then it will, what will happen is it'll be an all or nothing relationship. It's either I have to give it everything, it's going to kill me, or it's all over, never going to talk to him again, and then that becomes hurtful. So it just helps me to view a person as, and again, I'm not using the right words, mission or friendship. It, that just helps me know how to deal with it. So, yeah. Well, hey, everybody, we are at 10 till right now, and actually I have to get to my daughter's cross-country awards dessert. So I'm going to run, and I think we're probably good. You think? John,
this was just a fun conversation. It really went fast.
Yes, it was.
It really was. I didn't know how this would go tonight, if it would just be the three of us or if it would drag on, but this was really fun. So anyway, everyone, thank you so much. This was really fun. Maybe we'll do this, you know, once a month or once every 6 weeks or something, but this has been great. And we'll have this audio recording will be up shortly after this. And so thank you, and we'll see you next Thursday, okay?
Hey, everybody, thank you so much for participating. It was a lot of fun.
Yep. See ya.
Bye.